Welcome everyone to our College of Education First Gen Me podcast. This platform is designed to provide a space for our first generation college graduates to share within a small space of time valuable nuggets. And you know, we have had some valuable nuggets placed upon us in these past few episodes. So today I am so proud to host our event. You know, I am Dr. Jackie Thomas Miller, the Director of Advising and Retention, affectionately known as Dr. Jackie. I have with me today our special guest, Dr. Benjamin Mason. Dr. Mason is a faculty member here in the College of Education. Welcome, Dr. Mason.
Thank you for inviting me today, Jackie.
Well, we are so excited to have you, and you know, we always start out with this one special question. What does the first generation college graduate identity mean to you?
Right. So I spent a lot of time thinking about this after you sent this question out, because, and I think, you know, obviously any student group is wide and diverse and has a shockingly wide range of opinions and values. But I think for the one that I most connect to, the one I think about the most, the one that I think is very often the group that gets left behind, is kind of, they tend to be first generation college graduate and they tend to be generational poverty. And I was in that group, my wife was in that group, and I have a couple of my most vexing students in you know, since I became a professor on the other side, were also in that group. Very often, like, you have to combat your own family stereotypes to go forward. You're having to often burn bridges with family members. People question your sort of connection to the family identity. We're not those people. Who do you think, you know, what kind of person do you think you are? And in order to do so, you have to be very much a fighter. But once you get to the halls, once you get here, you're not supposed to be that. You can be that, but you're not supposed to present like that. You know, I joke that if I ever write a book about this, it'll be called "Please Enter Politely After Kicking Down the Door," because I think about like a soldier coming home and they don't know how to deal with peacetime. Is that colleges are built on very middle class values. We're very polite. We're never too direct in our communication style. This is in poverty. Anything other than direct communication is seen as a sign of something to be distrusted. Like, I don't know, this person's not being straight with me. And I see very often students that they come in, they're a little defensive. They need help, but they don't want to ask for it because it feels like weakness.
Right.
And it feels like you're showing everyone that you're weak. And and this is something that I talk to them directly. I'm like, if you need help, you have to ask for it here. If you are frustrated with something that's going on, if you're overwhelmed, you have to, not only do you have to seek help from the professional, but it can become very antagonistic. One of my favorite counseling psychology quotes, I was trained in that work, but I don't do that work, but I still read it, was that the psychological purpose of blame is to discharge shame. And ever since I read that quote maybe 8 years ago, I've tried to find a situation in which it doesn't fit. And it fits to me every time. So when a student is struggling, their grades are slipping, they're turning things in late, they've had this identity as a fighter. They very often have been the highest achieving members of their group, of their school, of their low income, you know, neighborhood. And now they're confronted with other people who have resources that they're, and skills that they haven't picked up.
Right.
So very often they get a little belligerent because it has to go out pressure wise, and they can't absorb it. It's too much. Already they're in a bit of identity crisis. And so I've seen this in others. I try to head it off. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It's a lot to absorb that you're not a superstar anymore because you've moved to a totally different league of competitors. And the teaching pleasing behavior from some students is like, they're like the Michael Jordans of teacher pleasing behavior, whereas the student next to them might be a better student, might be smarter, might even be harder working too, but they're not giving the teacher the bread that they want. And that they're not nodding, they're not smiling, they're not agreeing. When they send an email, they're too abrupt. And these are the things that I think hold those kids back. I dropped out of college myself. I had to go back when I was close to 30. And was Old Man River in graduate school.
And
I was. They sang that song, Old Man River, every time I walked down the hallway. And, you know, it was, and that was because I had to process my own childhood. And, mm-hmm. and I had to get to the right mental space to say, like, okay, what is it that they have to teach me? And, you know, saying okay doesn't necessarily mean that you're kneeling. It just mm-hmm. means that you're saying, okay, this is the rules of this game as I play it right now, mm-hmm. even if I don't think they're fair.
And, you know, Dr. Mason, you mentioned two important points that we talked about in other episodes. Ryan Farrow, who is our teacher education recruiter, he talked about that generational poverty, you know, having to deal with his family identity, stepping outside of the box, and like you said, had to kick down the door because it wasn't even in the cards for anybody in his family to go to college. And then Dr. Obenchain, she talked about we need to ask for help. You know, oftentimes when we're first-generation college students, we just think, like you said, it's a sign of weakness to ask for help. And you talked about your journey and how you actually dropped out, but you came back. And that's very important because, you know, oftentimes as first-generation college students, I know they're going through these crises and they're going through all these things in their head. You're like, you brought up so many important points. And repeat that quote again for me. You gave another quote about
the psychological purpose of blame is to discharge shame.
Yeah, that is something that we need to post and reflect upon as first-generation college students. And, you know, you did mention, and we're going to have as one of our future guests, your wife, Dr. Rose Mason. She's also a faculty member here in the College of Education. Now, when you entered back into college at the ripe old age of 30,
yeah, that's right.
Were you all together? Because, you know, she's a first-generation college graduate. Did she influence you? Were you together at that time?
I think she probably badgered me a bit. I was in East Texas, and so you got to be really careful. Being the smartest guy in the room in East Texas is a dubious honor at times. And that old quote about, you know, if you're the smartest guy in the room, then you probably need to find a different room, mm-hmm. you know. And she was probably challenging to me, even though she was much quieter then. And that how smart I was didn't matter as so much as what you'd accomplish. You have to get to the save points of the game. Graduate, you know, your associate's degree, your bachelor's degree, your master's degree, these are all save points. You know, your license and accreditation. Once you've gotten those, no one can ever take that away from you. The publications work the same way for those who are professors, but you have to get to the save points. You can't make excuses because there's always a reason. There's always an unreasonable professor. Mm-hmm. There's always an unreasonable parking ticket that you can't pay, and there's always going to be a health crisis every other semester mm-hmm. for someone. There's going to be deaths in the family. Mm-hmm. And I talk about these things. So I had a rough time of it, but, you know, I had it better than a lot of students. I've had students of mine that when they got their financial aid as graduate students, their families asked for money because they knew mm-hmm. that, you know, they had gotten notification that they had received cash.
Right, right.
And so they were expected to essentially subsidize the family need with mm-hmm. the student loans, with borrowed money mm-hmm. that they're probably still paying now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we joke when my only real student loan, because I sought funding opportunities, was paying off a car to go to graduate school, and my wife's only real student loan was paying for our wedding. And so, which is funny, right? But there was no other option at the time. This is a weird experience for people who are raised in middle and upper middle class to talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was at A&M, I taught child development, and I used to give the Heinz dilemma. And if you're not familiar with the Heinz dilemma, Heinz's wife is dying of this curable disorder, and there's only one person who has the cure, in the town, and he's a chemist, and he wants to charge like $10,000 for this cure. And Heinz tries to sell everything he can, ask everyone he can for money. He can't come up with the money. Should he steal it? It's actually a moral dilemma. And it's not about whether you should steal it or not. It's about your reasoning, because the reasoning determines whether or not. Because you can say no, he shouldn't, because it's universally wrong to take others' property. Or you could say no, he shouldn't. Yes, he should, because life is more important than property. Period. Both of those are actually on the same level of sort of ethical reasoning. They're universal values and principles, mm-hmm. and that's what they're about. And I remember I spent 20 minutes with my group struggling because they could not fathom that someone could not get $10,000 if they had to. I was like, I can tell you with an absolute certainty in my entire childhood that my family could not have laid hands on $10,000 given 2 months, no matter what had happened. It was not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so eventually I got so tired of it and it repeated the next semester. I was like, $10 million is what the cost for the drug, because they were like, okay, you're right. So we can't come up with 10 mil. I just can't have this argument again. But they couldn't stretch their brain to even consider that, right. because they had never been in a place of
right.
want.
Right.
You know, if you've never run the risk of having to move before they put the lock on the door, so you have to get what stuff you can carry with you out, mm-hmm. you don't understand this place,
right.
you know?
Right. And you know, I appreciate you sharing your story, because it's going to really impact our first generation college students, because I know they're going through this right now. I know somebody out there is saying exactly what you're talking about. $10,000, that's like $10 million to my family. So you brought in a lot of perspectives today, and I really appreciate it. And I really hope that our students will really seek out some of our first generation college graduates that we have here at the College of Education, because each one of us has so much to offer in regards to mentorship, just advice. Just come down and have a seat with one of us and just have a talk, and let's talk about the journey and how we got through, because you can get through. And I really appreciate you joining me today, Dr. Mason. And can you close us out again with that special quote?
The psychological purpose of blame is to discharge shame. So we don't want to feel weak. We don't want to feel like we're exposed in any way, and so very often we'll act sometimes aggressively, sometimes overly defensively, to the point where it reads as aggression to people that are raised in middle class backgrounds, but in reality it's just a person that's hurting,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Absolutely.
And I do think at the end of the day we're operating from either love or fear,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so one of those two places. If someone is overreacting in a college context, it's almost always fear-based.
I just hope that our students do not let fear diminish their dream of becoming a college graduate of Purdue University. And once again, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. This is Dr. Jackie Thomas-Miller. Remember, we're here in Baring Hall. We're on the third floor, fourth floor, fifth floor, sixth floor, because you know our faculty members and our administration are here for you. So we hope that you enjoyed our episode today, and we look forward to you joining again soon. Thank you.